become a success syndrome catalyst coach? It's a long and winding path. And through this next iteration of the Growth Mindset Guru, I'm going to break down how I got here and where I am now and how I help my clients succeed. I hope you all enjoy this. This series is based on the book, The Tools, and the subtitle should be, but isn't, How to Increase Courage, Creativity, and Willpower. I'm Coach Ronald Hunt, and this is The Tools. Hi, my name's Ron, and I had a shitty childhood. I bet a lot of you did too, and I attract people like that into my life. We don't commiserate all that much. We don't talk too much about it unless they're stuck. When people get stuck in life, that is really when you have to go back and I call it cleaning up the incompletes. So in order to progress in my life, I think my first go-around with therapy was probably when I was about 12 years old. My folks had told me that if I did not promise to take care of my disabled brother after they were gone, they were going to disinherit me, all that stuff. And I said, I don't want your money. Because my brother was a son of a bitch, for want of a better word. And I know that I just shocked a lot of you out there today. So that was my first go-around with therapy. I tried some therapy in my first marriage. That also didn't do a whole lot. In my second marriage, my new and improved wife, therapy was amazing. We would go and we would get all of our issues resolved, and then we'd go celebrate. We'd go out to dinner, we'd go out for a drink, we'd go out for a show. Isn't that a wonderful way to habit stack something that you need to do? I think that's interesting. Phil Stutz and Mick Michels, who wrote the book The Tools, have had also epiphanies in their life. I'm going to start breaking down their book in about a minute and a half. I want to give you some background on them and where they came from. The short version, therapy has progressed more in the last several decades, I'd say, than in the centuries before. And it's because it had to. It's not just our increased pace of life. It's that therapy didn't work for people. When I was growing up, I would see certain people who had been in therapy for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and they were worse than when they started. That's an example of a broken system. But that is the way therapists were taught. They weren't taught to help people solve their problems. They were taught to listen and explore and go back to childhood and listen to how their mother and their father ruined their lives. But it really didn't help people because it just wasn't, the symptoms and the causes are always what we look at solving in this life. And what Stutz and Michels have done is they've looked at the last couple generations of coaching that people have been doing really effectively, incorporated some these five tools into it, and this is their new brand of psychotherapy. And I'm digging it. So I also know some of you watch Stutz on Netflix or Shrinking on HBO Plus, and this is all based on the rules. So, but you're getting 5%, 8% of what they're actually teaching in these films or series. What's the real meat of it is in the book. So we're going to start breaking down the rules. Introduction to the rules. We kind of have to have in coaching, as in therapy, there are always going to be certain clients that vex us, where we talk things out, where we come up with possible solutions, possible implementations, and yet they can't do them or won't accept them or have some sort of block. I think that that's where we're going to begin the introduction to the tools. Barry Mitchells had one of his first patients. She had this fear of being cheated on and abandonment, and he knew why. Sure, her dad had left unexpectedly when she was very young. So it's not unusual for women in those situations to have problems seeing commitment from men going forward in their lives. Makes sense, right? But the patient, the client, already knew this. So what she said to Michelle's was, tell me how I can stop obsessing. Don't waste my time and money on why I'm insecure. I already know. Sometimes we do already know. But he couldn't help her because he hadn't been trained. There was no therapy to help patients like this. When he consulted other people in his practice, other mentors, other professors, their response was always the same. They didn't have a solution. What they said was the patient was impulsive, resistant, and craved immediate gratification. And that was what therapists did. Coaches would look at it a little bit differently. And I always tell someone in that situation, make a list, put it in your calendar. I give them a structure and some accountability and let me know how it went. But therapists didn't really do that. So what therapists would do is they would tell the patient to go back to your childhood, even though she already knew that her dad leaving had put her in this situation. So it was frustrating for Michelle's. And this was not Michelle's first profession. He was a distinguished lawyer, graduated from the top law school, went to the top law firm, hated it. So he wanted to do something else. So he finds himself another profession where he's going to be frustrated. So this is the beginning of his look for a higher power. So what he ends up doing is going to a seminar that Phil Stutz was teaching. He was teaching a series of seminars because he had developed these rules on how to help people. And this was fascinating to him. The main part of the focus was the solution, not the problem. And again, this is a lot more like coaching. So human beings possessed untapped forces that allow them to solve their own problems. And problems were just opportunities to enter this world of untapped potential. But Michelle's was fascinated and he listened intently. And after each seminar, he would go up and ask all these questions and figure out how he could start using it with his patients. So Phil called these things the tools. And over the course of this podcast series, we will talk about the five tools that they introduce, and then we will talk about how to use them in new and novel ways in coaching after we teach you the tools. How does that sound to everybody? Probably pretty good. These are simple tools. Anyone can use them. The only secret to the tools is to be conscious of when you need to use them and to use them consistently. And we've got their fifth tool actually helps you implement the other four tools because they got frustrated when people gave up. We'll talk about human nature in a couple of minutes. So if you start, Michelle's went back to this original patient, gave her the first tool. She started using it immediately. And it helped. It inspired her to become a more active, enthusiastic participant in her own therapy. So how very cool is that? So someone's not being helped,
and given one tool, immediately they've got positive outcomes. So Phil Stutz tells this story in the introduction that he had another patient, a doctor. And the doctor was afraid of every single test, and he was going to get his board certification test in surgery, not tomorrow, not next week, in 6 months, and he was already worrying about it. So what Stutz's professors and predecessors had taught him was that it was his father's problem, because his father had dropped out of college. He was projecting onto the son, and the son was projecting onto, he couldn't be more successful than the father, and the father would hate him if he was a success, and this was creating all his anxiety. And so when Phil talked to the doctor looked at me and said, "That sounds like something out of a textbook." And it was, because there was no way to treat someone who had that long-range anxiety. So that frustrated Stutz and got him to start working on these tools. He started to understand how helpless patients could feel facing a problem by themselves. They needed those solutions, and they needed those solutions that they could implement right away so that they could fight back. And that's how we got going here. So both Phil Stutz and Barry Michels had the same problem every single therapist had during this time period in, I'd say, the late 1900s, before the turn of the century, because therapy had remained the same for many, many, many years. All young therapists doubt themselves because they don't have enough tools to really help people in the here and now. So what the schools and what their mentors would teach them was therapy can only do so much. Once you accept its limitations, you won't feel so bad about yourself. How about that? Isn't that frustrating? How would that make you feel if you went to medical school for 4 years after college and you realized that you still couldn't help people? But that is what that profession was professing at that point. But Phil Stutz got an early start. He had a childhood. Remember talking, I was honest about my childhood at the beginning of this episode. His dad was a little screwed up too. He felt responsible for nurturing his dad when he was 12 years old. I can relate. So he was able to maybe get that earlier start. And although he was frustrated and this gave him the reason to go to medical school, it didn't give him the answers. But he wasn't intimidated by it because he'd already experienced it for a full generation of his life. So just because he was hoping to address his patient's pain didn't mean that he knew how to do it. So he came up with his overriding mission. Every time a patient asked for relief from hurt feelings, self-consciousness, demoralization, or anything else, he had to address it then and there. He had to come up with something on the spot. So he was working without a net. He was going to do this all by trial and error. And he just started saying, well, if you did this, what would change? And given the patient's possibility, by giving the patient's possibility, he gave them hope. Hope and progress are the two biggest tools I use in coaching. It changes everything for people. But real change requires you to change your behavior, not your attitude. How many times have you heard, you need to change your attitude? If you change your behavior, your attitude will follow. If you change your attitude, your behavior will not necessarily follow. So if you can learn one thing from this chapter, this introduction, I think that would be one of the keys. So tools require you to do something. To work, you have to do something over and over again. To become proficient, to start failing forward, even when you get frustrated. And for all of this to work, we have to believe in something. It doesn't have to be God. Let's call it collective unconscious, or spiritual world, or higher world. Basically, there are some things we can't explain in life. If we can accept that, and we're going to talk about this later in this series, we have the ability to have hope to move forward. So, Phil played with, tested, adapted these tools, some of them 100 times, and got them refined and better and better. And that is really what it took. And Ed put a lot of power into his patients' hands. It gave them a vested interest in getting better. And patients who use the tools regularly were now able to control their symptoms, panic, negativity, avoidance. I use it for imposter syndrome, for my clients who feel that they don't deserve that promotion. Patients begin and clients begin to develop new abilities. That's the fringe benefit. The tools turn out to be more powerful than Stutz even hoped. Instead of seeing problems as an expression of a condition whose cause was in the past, he started to see them as catalysts for developing forces that were already present, lying dormant inside us to do more. I always tell people, how does that make you feel and what happened when you started implementing it? And if I give people a little something to do as part of their coaching, it's not uncommon for them to tell me, I did this and then I did this. They did more than I asked them to do because they had that moment of inspiration. They had that moment of progress. They had some hope. So they kept going. So patients we give the patients concrete access to the forces that are needed to solve their problems. Very straightforward stuff. Once you feel a higher force in action, you can believe a little bit. And we're going to revisit this later in the podcast. The whole goal, instill hope in your clients or patients. You can give people more in one session than you have gotten in years. Many of my clients say that I'm not their first coach. And I look at them and I go, I know. I'm the coach who gets things done. I'm not the coach who's going to string you out for 6 months just to have you pay me for 6 months. I want to see you succeed. So patients and clients become better leaders, better parents, bolder in every area of your life. And they carry an extraordinary power that make it possible to do things you would have never done before. Once you learn the tools, they will revolutionize the way you look at your life and your problems. We're going to, each in the next four chapters, we're going to cover in one episode. And then the fifth episode, we're going to cover the tool that gets you to keep coming back. And you're going to have moments of doubt. You're going to have moments of skepticism through all these chapters. Towards the end of each episode, I'm going to break down the questions that you want to ask. So write them down as we talk about the tools and see if I answer them. If not, I want you to email me along the way and I will answer them. This is really heady stuff. And this is an introduction to the tools, the amazing book by Phil Stutz and Barry Michels that has revolutionized therapy because they started to make it more like coaching. As a coach, I can learn a little something from them on how to improve my process as well. And that's what we're all doing together. So I hope you enjoyed this podcast and how I break down the rules. Thank you.